The following is Catherine Raker's Let's Just Talk with Dan Perkins as a special guest.
Welcome to Let's Just Talk with Catherine Raker.
Hi, this is Catherine Raker of Catherine Raker's World and Let's Just Talk, our syndicated programming. I, every week, have the honor of having Dan Perkins, who is, you can't put him into a category. He's too much. He's author, commentator, speaker, TV and radio personality, veteran. But to do so would limit this multifaceted person. In essence, Dan Perkins is all of these and more. And he's a good friend. I've been with him for many years. And he's been married for many years. He has four children and grandchildren. And I don't know if he have any, and I don't know if he has any great-grandchildren yet.
Not yet.
And he has managed a successful money management business for many years and serving as a veteran and starting a nonprofit Songs and Stories for Soldiers .us. I want to thank you for joining me every week. It's such a pleasure. I have to tell you, Dan, our topic today is a sad topic, but we want to make it a joyful one because this person is definitely a martyr and in heaven. And that is the assassination of Charlie Kirk of Turning Point. He died at 31 years of age. He was a great Christian, a great father, a great husband. And at 18, or even before that, he wanted to go into, didn't want to go to college. Turn college down to go out and speak to young people that had been in such a woke situation. Dan, thank you for coming. It was such a solemn 3 days that I had tears in my eyes.
Well, I was close to myself many times. I think that what's very important, Catherine, is we lost a charismatic leader who made a change. He was one of the principal people in his organization that helped Donald Trump get elected president. He energized young people away from the Democratic Party to the Republican Party and to independents to get them away from the wokeness. I think that really what disturbed me more than anything else, Catherine, is the vitriol which they attacked him after he was shot and killed, from the left. I mean, we had the guy from MSNBC within moments after he was shot, just crucified him, and was later fired from the network, and the network saying that it was unacceptable and what he did. But there were a lot of other people. A lot of other people on the left who are criticizing Charlie for what he did. Charlie, his key to success was kind of a linchpin for when I started this network with one show for half an hour on a Friday afternoon. I wanted to provide a platform that people could express their opinion, and I didn't have to agree with them, and they didn't have to agree with me, but we treated each other with respect. We didn't use any profanity, and if you interrupted people to try and screw up their train of thought, I turned my microphone off, and they were off the show. I've never had to do that because everybody understands what the rules are for my show. But I've never had anybody complain and never had to turn off somebody's microphone. But what Charlie did is that he would allow people to come up to the tent who were vehemently opposed to him and what he believed and let him speak their piece, not interrupt them, and he didn't let the crowd interrupt what we were saying. And then he responded. And, you know, one of the things that we saw time and time again, when we saw shows of him on the campus trail, is there's at least one person who criticized him for not having a college degree. And he said he looked at it and he looked at what was being taught and
Right.
the bias and the bigotry in the colleges and university system. He didn't want that. He wanted to do something else. And I think that's true. But the left doesn't have the ability to allow people to speak their mind when it's in conflict with the left. The left believes that they are the ones that are right, correct, and everybody else is wrong.
And you know, it's weird, and I'm going to share this with my audience. But back when I was going to school, and I'm from a very big family, I'm from a family of seven. We didn't have the money for me to go to college. I went and took college courses, and I grew in a lot of different ways. And I understand, Charlie, you know, and I love working with young people and always have, Dan. So to me, for them to say that is number one, cruel. And it's kind of, it shows their inability to understand people at all. I really believe in my heart of hearts, Dan, they don't know what Hitler did. They don't know what Mussolini did. They have no idea of the words they're saying. Because they weren't of that time, a lot of them.
Right.
No matter what religion you are, Charlie believed that that was important. He believed in family, children, faith, faith first. And look at how many people he knew globally and the millions of people that loved him.
Yeah, that's true. And I wish I could remember who said it the first time, but I can't. But lots of people who knew Charlie and worked with Charlie were commenting over the last few days. And one person made a comment that struck me and has stayed with me. Charlie Kirk was a civil rights activist. That's what he was about.
Yeah, he
Civil
was.
rights. As much as Martin Luther King or anybody else, he was a civil rights activist. He believed that people had the right to have freedom of expression, freedom of speech, and those rights shouldn't be impinged or taken away. And yet the left was absolutely trying to do that, take them away and not allow people to speak their mind. And they intimidated him. And they intimidated at the beginning of the Biden administration and all the way through. But when it looked like Mr. Trump was going to win, the intimidation went away and the American public began to talk and tell people exactly what they thought. And we're not afraid of persecution under freedom of speech. And that's when things changed in this, began to change in this country. And well, why Mr. Trump beat Kamala in every battleground state and every blue state that was her line of defense. She lost every one of them because the American people have had enough. And yet here we are, approximately 9 months into Mr. Trump's first and only term as president now, we have lots and lots of people who are talking about how terrible he is. We had Jasmine Crockett on Friday called him Hitler again.
Right. They're all talking Hitler. That's the sad part. So
Yeah,
I think they need
it's
education on Hitler. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but they
that's
have no
okay.
idea.
Right. You're absolutely right. I agree. And so that these people are using Hitler and Nazi as terms to criticize Mr. Trump and his administration and the people in his administration, but they're not aware of what they're saying because they don't have any idea of what really went on and what was going on in Germany and what Hitler was doing with the people and the government. And control. And it's because they didn't understand it, it didn't resonate with them using the word Nazi or Hitler as it would with somebody of our age who, while I was born just at the end of the World War II, but studied it extensively in school and on my own. And it's really a situation that we have an education system that doesn't teach world history and American history anymore. They teach whatever they want to teach, and throw whatever spin they want to spin on it, as opposed to dealing with the facts.
Well, and that's changing. And I think with this movement, it's going to change dramatically to the point where I think with President Trump and our education secretary and everybody that he has brought together that is so passionate, so good, they really care. And we just have to reiterate it over and over again. Marriage is a, to us, it's a sacrament, right? The whole thing about abortion, I did hear Charlie talk to a gal about abortion. She did not understand what abortion does, what that there is. She said, oh, it's just an embryo. It's a living being. And that's what they don't understand. And if we didn't have sonograms and pictures of a baby in the womb, right? We need to put that up on billboards from now on. We need to, I really believe we need to re as our age group needs to re-educate people in what is really important and why our government was even formed. And we're
Well,
not a democracy, we're a republic.
it's and the Democrats always get it wrong, and
That's
I think
right.
they get it. I think they get it wrong on purpose.
They want to.
And going back to the abortion situation, I have worked, as you have worked, with abortion prevention counseling centers, and something like 85% of women or girls who come in, have a sonogram, and see the child, choose not to have an abortion. They may give birth to the child and keep it, or give it away for adoption, whatever. But that process of being able to see what's inside you and to see it move and count fingers and toes and noses, you realize that it's not just an embryo, it's a real living human being that's inside you,
That's
and you
right.
have some strong moral responsibility to protect that child.
That's right. I mean, if you were unfortunately had an abortion as a young person, God forgives you. That's the other thing that people have to realize. The country has turned so much woke over the years, and this whole gender thing has really terrified children. Really, in a sense, they don't know what to believe. Does that make sense?
I think it's more than that, Catherine. I think that there are people our age who have seen what has happened to our country over the last 4 to 10 years, and they're looking at it and saying, who do you trust? Can you trust what the CDC and the FDA is saying about drugs and pharmaceuticals? Can you trust that the IRS or the Justice Department?
Right.
Who can you trust? And so that trust has been broken. And who do you believe? Who do you trust? I mean, Johnny Carson had a show on television before he went to the Tonight Show called Who Do You Trust? And it was about who do you trust in conversations or whatever it is. The point is that we've lost confidence in our leadership in our country because we don't believe we've been told the truth. And now that we're starting to get the truth, it's difficult because we don't know whether we need to believe the new version with Mr. Trump, or is he lying to us, or are the people lying to us? There's a fundamental problem of lack of confidence and belief in our leadership and in our government.
And on that note, we need to take a short break. And, I want to thank you for your service and give your websites, please, Dan.
Sure. Songs and Stories for Soldiers.us helps veterans who are suffering from traumatic brain injury, PTSD, sleep deprivation, and suicide prevention.
We'll be right back after these messages. You're listening to Let's Just Talk with Catherine Raker.
Perkins, the author of Sad Eyes, Book 2. In Book 1, we watch her grow up and develop into an intelligent, practical, and beautiful woman. She knows what she wants to be, and she will not let anything happen that will stop her from reaching her goal. Book 2 has many challenges she faces during World War II. People say it's hard to put down. You can get Sad Eyes Book 2 at Amazon.com or JanCarrollPublishing.com.
After these messages, you're listening to Let's Just Talk with Catherine Riker.
Did you know that memory loss now affects almost 7 million people in America? And the Alzheimer's Research Foundation estimates that by the year 2050, there will be 50 million people with dementia in America. Are you preparing your family, especially your grandchildren, for this issue? This is Dan Perkins, and I'm the author of a new book for children ages 9 to 12 and their families to help them understand that it's not their fault when Grammy can't remember them. Why Can't Grammy Remember Me is available at Amazon or through your local bookseller. Don't make your grandchildren part of the lost generation. This is Dan Perkins, and I want to introduce you to my latest thriller, Ted Baker, in Terrorist Gold. This is a continuation of the Brotherhood of the Red Nile story that created quite a stir because people couldn't really separate fiction from reality. This new novel is a story how the Russians interfered with the presidential election by actually blackmailing one of the candidates. Ted Baker has sent one of his agents, John Seacrest, to Moscow to try and trace the source of money that funded the Brotherhood, and John meets up with Natasha, a Russian with an attitude. Like the others in the series, it's full of cliffhangers. It's a real page-turner once you start. You're going to find it difficult to put it down. Some people recommend don't start it after 9 o'clock because you'll be up all night. If you're looking for a really scary thriller, as current as today's headline, then Ted Baker in Terrorist Gold is the book for you. Order your copy of Ted Baker in Terrorist Gold, and after you've read it, go to Amazon and write a review.
Back to the show. You're listening to Let's Just Talk with Catherine Riker.
We are back with Dan Perkins. We're talking about what happened to Charlie Kirk. A turning point, what's happening in the country. And after seeing his wife come on television last night, I had tears in my eyes. This woman had just lost her husband. She has two little children, and she has decided to take on Turning Point and keep it growing and make it a global entity like no other. And she's a very, very brave woman. What did you think of it, Daniel?
I agree with you. I was hopeful that she would she would step up. I don't know much about her. I understand she is a very smart person. I don't know when you take the emotion out of what there was last night, you wonder can she replicate what Charlie was doing when he was doing the college tours? I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. She can perhaps grow into it. But I think that this killing the head of the organization does not mean that you kill the organization. We saw that with Martin Luther King and any other leaders that were assassinated or murdered, and they didn't go away. And I don't think Turning Point's going away.
I don't think so either.
We heard, as we always do after a shooting, we hear about banning guns. AOC wants to know when we're going to do this, and Elizabeth Warren wants to know. And so I don't know why I never asked this question before, but it came to me yesterday to do some research on this question. Mm-hmm. I've always believed that gun laws do nothing about the bad guys and adversely affect all the law-abiding citizens
right. Who
want the right to defend themselves and own a gun. And what I found out was that the Justice Department did a survey in prisons of people who were convicted of crimes and sentenced to jail in prison that used a weapon in the commission of the crime. Mm-hmm. They wanted to find out what percentage of those people who were in prison for using a weapon, what percentage of them acquired the gun at a legitimate gun store. Number was 2%. 2% of the crimes that are done in the United States involving a weapon, 53% were acquired in the black market. And others were lost or stolen or found or whatever. But only 2% were actually bought in gun stores. So the idea that we can pass legislation that's going to stop this, no, it's not. Because it only impacts the potential of 2% of the crime. Not that a life is not worth something, but the idea that we're using a very small minority of people who are bad guys who were able to acquire the weapon legitimately, legally, using it in a crime versus all the rest of them that aren't. So when passing a law that affects us as law-abiding citizens doesn't do anything except put us in danger if they take away our guns, the bad guys who are not going to report their guns, they're not going to tell the government that they've got guns, they're going to be armed, and we as Americans are going to be unarmed.
The other thing I want to ask you is, if you don't mind me interjecting, is that the gun that this assassin had, he got from somewhere and from someone and brought it onto the campus.
Yeah, and
get it.
Keep in mind that the gun that he used was a deer hunting rifle.
Okay.
Single shot, bolt action. Wasn't an automatic weapon. It wasn't a weapon that snipers use, but he used it in order to kill Charlie. But it was a single shot, bolt action, old rifle that he had used as a child growing up for deer hunting.
And that's what it was. It was a hunter as well, right?
Yes, right. And so the 200 yards was not a difficult shot, but to hit it where he apparently aimed into the carotid artery so he would bleed out fast, was a remarkable shot from 200 yards.
Right. And you as a veteran would know that. And a lot
I
of
was a marksman too. I could hit targets at 500 yards.
Right. And most people that, but is growing up as a, you know, in a hunting family, you tend to be very accurate, especially if you want deer meat or whatever, you know. And so, but he turned radical pretty fast.
And see, that's the thing that I'm still arguing with myself about, trying to figure out what caused him to turn. Was it the internet? Was it people from the college? What caused him to turn to the deep left and deep enough that he decided he had to kill Charlie? Because Charlie believed in the freedom of speech. He believed in the right to keep and bear arms. All the things that the Constitution says he can do, this young man was against it because Charlie was in favor of them. But I would like to know more about what activities he was involved in. Well, we saw a video. I saw it last night on Megyn Kelly's show. It was a video of him at 17 or 18 receiving a letter from the college in Utah where he was given a $32,000 or $38,000 four-year scholarship to go to college. He dropped out after the first semester.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we don't, where he shot and killed Charlie was about 125 to 150 miles from his home.
House, right.
And whether he was in, nobody seems to know if he was in school anywhere at 22. Did he, after he dropped out after the first semester, did he go to another school? Did he graduate? We don't know any of that information, or we may know it, but you and I don't know it, or the broad public doesn't know it. But I think we got to find out what happened, because I don't think the radicalization took place in a matter of weeks, although it can.
Oh, this I don't think it did either.
This young man at 17, 18, who decided to walk away from a huge scholarship, there was something going on there. And I don't know whether that's where the radicalization started or not. We don't know, but I would like to know.
Yeah, and I think we're going to find out over the next whatever it takes to make us really truly understand. And, you know, you never know. So I think that's what we have to do. I think we have to continue to do to educate our children and educate adults.
I think we also, when we go to the polls in November on the primary and we go into the midterm elections in 2026, we have to become proactive as Republicans and independents and conservatives. We have to be proactive to go after the Democratic candidates, not with guns, but with words, and confront them about their philosophy and their policies, which have led to too many deaths.
Right. And I think God is really stepping in here. I really mean that. And what Charlie said is kids are going back to church in droves, and they are also getting married and having children. And we just have to guide. We have to be a disciple of Christ, no matter if you're whatever religion you are, not a just a disciple of your faith, right, and not be afraid.
I agree.
And that's a wrap. We'll be back next week, right?
Yes.
Okay. And I want to thank you so much for joining me today, Dan. It's always such a pleasure to have you on my show. Absolutely. And I'll be praying for you if you pray for me.
Absolutely. Not a problem.
Not a problem. And we have kept Charlie in our prayers. We have kept Charlie in our prayers and our thoughts. And, you know, we are praying for his wife and all of the young people that are part of Turning Point or any program similar to Turning Point.
Right. Absolutely.
Give your websites out again.
Yes. Songs and Stories for Soldiers is my veteran outreach program. DanPerkinsMedia.org is where you can see TV shows and listen to radio. Also, AMFM 24/7. I'm on Friday and Saturday evenings at 8 o'clock. And I'm on Rumble, and I'm on Your News and all the usual suspects in podcasting. And thank you for having me on, as you always do.
You're welcome. And we're on Rumble. We're on Your News. We're on every social media out there. And we applaud everything that the government's done to find what happened to Charlie Kirk. And thank you so much for joining me today. Don't forget to go to our website at katherinerakersworld.com, and let's just talk. And don't forget our chef show, The Chef You and I. We'll see you soon.
You've been listening to Let's Just Talk with Katherine Riker.
This is the Jimmy Jaguar Show with Jim, Frank, Dan, and IQ.
We are live coast to coast, border to border on iHeartRadio today, and we have our good, close, personal, longtime friend, Mr. Frank Minuccio, with us today. And the incredible Dan Perkins is with us from Dan Perkins Media. IQ will join us here in just a few. But Frank, one of the things that I noticed over the weekend, which is, I don't know why people are cheering for this, but I noticed over the weekend that everybody was, because they hadn't heard from Donald Trump in a few days because he was taking time off, everybody thought the guy was dead.
I wish he was dead.
Have we just gotten to the point where he's so loud and so vocal all the time that if you don't hear anything out of the guy, you're like, oh my God, he died. is that what you're getting out of this, Bernuccio?
Well, I think Dan put his finger directly on the issue. This is wishful thinking on the part of the left. They haven't been able to make any headway against him. He's still popular. They haven't been able to respond to any of his policies. He's backed them into a corner, so now the Democratic Party is a party that supports violent crime. It's the party that supports open borders. It's the party that seems to support America's enemies as opposed to our friends. So this was wishful thinking on their part. And of course, it's totally contradictory because we hear from the left and their commentators that the guy is all over the place. He never shuts up. He's never not talking about some issue. And then he takes a weekend where he's not quite as vocal. And of course, we hear that he's dead. What utter nonsense.
Dan,
yes, sir.
Your thoughts on this, baby.
I absolutely agree with Frank. You reminded me, I was listening to what Frank was saying. It reminded me of, I think, and you correct me if I'm wrong, Frank, H.R. Haldeman, who was telling Nixon, you're on too much. We've got to take you off the air, calm you down, and not give you so much publicity. Was I pretty close to that? I know that happened, but I don't know if it was Haldeman or not. You're right. He's constantly, he's a perpetual motion machine. And it reminds me, however, of a question I've been meaning to ask you, Frank, about for a long time. It appears that Democrats have adopted a policy that whatever position Donald Trump takes, they take the other side. And with no concern as to what the ramifications might be to the party, to the reputation of the party, the support from the rank and file. It's you got to disagree with Trump, and you cannot ever give him one inch at all on anything.
There's two parts to that, and you're absolutely right, Dan. There's two parts to that, though. One, of course, is Trump derangement syndrome. If Trump, you know, as he said on a number of occasions, if he cured cancers in Macy's window, the headline in the New York Times would read, Trump puts medical workers out of a job. That's part of it. The other part of it, of course, is the progressive extremist toehold, or perhaps stranglehold is a better phrase, in the Democratic Party is such that rational positions that Democrats themselves would have taken a decade or two ago are now opposed by the current progressive Democratic Party. Open borders, clearly a nonsensical concept, but the Democratic Party opposes it. Strong national defense, obviously. The strong national defense policy is opposed by the Democratic Party. So these are the two factors that lead to the Democrats to take those what we call 95-5 positions, where despite the fact that 95% of the country is in favor of the Trump position, they are going to be opposed to it.
I agree with you. I think that's a keen insight. I look at it and I wonder, I've always wondered about the Democratic Party and in specific, I've always wondered, not many people talk about it, but I've always wondered why, no matter which network you watch, ABC, NBC, CBS, New York Times, Washington Post, virtually the same words are used on all of the networks. I've often wondered, who's the master scriptwriter? Who is the person that sends out the press release that says, this is the message of the day? And they all follow in suit and read it almost verbatim. Who is that person, Frank?
Well, it's a great observation, Dan. You're absolutely right. I don't know who the person is. I suspect it varies from year to year, whether it's a Jim Carville in the past, whether it is a Rahm Emanuel in the past, who it is now. It's an open question at this point. Perhaps George Soros, who knows? Points out to an extraordinary difference between progressive Democrats and conservative Republicans. We're at usagovpolicy.com. If you missed our show on your local station, there's even a link to the show on social media where you can get it there. We're speaking this week with Rachel Ehrenfeld, who is the host of the Soros Agenda. And we're also going to be talking to Tyler Gray, who you might remember is a former Delta Force member, but he was also the star of a TV show called SEAL Team, which was fairly popular. We're going to be talking about the Ukraine war, and we're going to talk about how during the Biden administration, the money that should have gone for homeless vets and for veterans with PTSD went instead to all those 20 million illegal immigrants in the United States.
Of course they did. Frank, you are amazing. Keep up the good work, baby. Nice suit this week, as always.
Thanks, Jim. I wear them just for you.
That's right. And Frank, thanks for doing this, baby. Thanks for being a good sport. We'll see you next week.
I look forward to it. Take care.
Appreciate it. There you go. That's Frank DiNuccio, USA Gov Policy.